Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your radio show host, Randy Fine. So the mind, the power of the mind, is one of the strongest and most powerful powers a person possesses. We all know that Napoleon Hill quote that says, whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve. And today's special guest, Dr. David James, an expert on personal transformation, is back on A Fine Time for Healing. This is his second guest appearance to introduce his new book, Discovering Your Magnificent Mind. Dr. David James is a master of transformation, a compassionate healer, and compelling public speaker. James has the ability to touch the hearts of everyone that he encounters. He was previously a military veteran. Well, that makes him currently a military veteran. He started his professional life as a law enforcement officer with the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. And then he holds a degree in clinical psychology and graduate degrees in spirituality and human development. He is a certified hypnotherapist and is in private practice in Beverly Hills. We're going to delve into the mind today, so let's get started. Good morning, Dr. James. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm grateful to be with you today. It's good to be back on the show.
Thank you. It's great to have you. So we're talking about our magnificent mind. What makes our mind so magnificent?
It has such potential. Your mind can literally create miracles. It can heal your body. It can bring satisfying, loving relationships into your life, whether you've not had one, perhaps. It can help increase your financial bottom line. It can connect you to your transcendent self, to your higher self, to God, to angels, to spirits, you name it, it can do it.
Well, what else could we want, right? You say that miracles are our birthright. and that's a very, very positive statement, and one I think we would all like to believe.
Go ahead. Yeah, please.
No, I wanted to hear what you had to say.
Well, I was going to say that that is a provocative statement on the one hand, because, you know, we culturally, you know, most of us growing up in religious families or traditions have always believed that miracles were kind of the province of God and angels, but which they are. But the interesting thing is that as we connect with our magnificent mind, we're able to tap into that same source energy and see these kind of wonders happen in front of our very eyes. And it really is a participation with kind of the laws of nature and then kind of going beyond. And it's just a wonderful experience.
Yeah, and I think that miracles happen often and we don't necessarily recognize them as such. But I think we all experience them more often than we would, you know, think we do. So let's talk a little bit about the conscious and subconscious mind. So you say that the conscious mind is only about 10% of the power of the mind, and that the subconscious mind holds most of the power, but it needs the conscious mind to put it to work. So let's talk a little bit about that. What is the conscious and subconscious minds? What are the subconscious and conscious minds?
Well, it's real clear we only have one mind, and it has two functions, if you would. The conscious mind is that which enables us to get through the day-to-day in very practical ways. So, for example, you know, our ability to be logical is found in the conscious mind. Our ability to make decisions is found in the conscious mind. Our ability to conduct analytical exercises is in our conscious mind. Our willpower is in our conscious mind. And so this is an essential part of how we get through any day. The subconscious mind, though, is where our emotions reside, where our memories, where our dreams come from, where our life scripts are. And what I mean by that is that we each have a script about how our life is or is supposed to be or should be. That's found in the subconscious mind. Our habits are in the subconscious mind. So it really is the source of power for change. And so as Dr. Joseph Murphy said back in the 60s in Los Angeles, he was a pioneer in this field, he said that the conscious mind can be likened to the conductor and the subconscious mind to the orchestra, that the conscious mind can direct the subconscious mind. Or another metaphor would be that the conscious mind is the captain on the bridge of a ship and the subconscious mind is the propulsion system. So those are just two images of understanding how conscious and subconscious have independent functions and roles, but actually are really dependent upon each other to move forward.
So, and the subconscious mind is harder for us to access. And when patterns form in the subconscious mind, it's very difficult to get to them, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's why it's called subconscious, because it's below our consciousness. There's in the particular model of hypnotherapy that I was trained in, there is what's called a critical filter that separates the conscious and subconscious mind. We most often have direct experiences of our subconscious mind when we dream, for example. Plus, the subconscious mind doesn't use verbal language like we're using right now when we talk to each other. Instead, uses symbols, images, music, impulses, and so it's not more difficult to access. You just have to know how, because with my clients, we find that when we really start paying attention to the subconscious mind, it really opens up for them. So it's not a mystery. It's just learning how to access it.
Okay, so we often need a little bit of help to get there. if we're not professionals and don't really understand this. But even if we are, it's really hard for us to get to it ourselves. But there's also a superconscious mind. What is that?
The superconscious mind is a more recent discovery in the field of personal transformation that says that not only am I connected body, soul, and spirit to myself through my conscious and subconscious mind, but the quantum physics tells us that there exists a field of energy, and everything is in that field of energy. And so by accessing the superconscious mind, we are going into that field of energy, and we are able to be in touch with the consciousness of other people. We can be in touch with the consciousness of what some people would call the divine mind. We can be involved in circumstances like remote viewing, where we can see things happening on the other side of the planet. You know, the Stanford Research Institute did a lot of work with that. A lot of psychic phenomena all occur in the superconscious mind, where all the boundaries of personal identity have dissolved, and we are able to access, kind of plug into the whole of the experience of humanity.
Okay, so it's tapping into the spiritual world. It's tapping into people's energies, just as you said. So yeah, mm-hmm. that helps us to understand exactly what that is. You say in your book that we must align our mind, heart, intent, and purpose to realize the success that is latent in our subconscious. So can you explain what that means?
Well, to understand what that means is to understand how the subconscious mind works. We, especially as children, from age 0 to about 9, from birth to about 9 years old, just absorb everything that comes our way. Children, up to about 9 years old, spend most of their life in what later is called the subconscious mind. They're imaginal. They love music. They have, you know, imaginary best friends. They're flying through their rooms. You know, they're superheroes. That's why the fascination with that, because this is the language of the subconscious mind. But from birth to about 9 years of age, you know, we have experiences, and the experiences also come with a meaning attached to them. So, for example, I may have used this the last time we were on the show. Let's say that you come home as a little girl from school with straight A's in your report card. Your mom sits you down at the kitchen table with a piece of chocolate cake, a glass of cold milk, and while you're eating your cake as a reward for your straight A report card, she is rubbing your head, stroking your hair, telling you how much she and Daddy are proud of you and what a genius you are. You're going to go far in life, just filling you with love and love and love and love. So if every time you come home with a positive academic report of some form and you get the chocolate cake and the love and the affirmation, before too long, your subconscious mind attaches meaning to that chocolate cake. And that is that chocolate cake equals mother's love. So now as an adult, you come to visit me in Los Angeles and we go through the world famous farmers market where they have delectable foods of every kind, and we go past one of the bakery stands and there's a piece of chocolate cake. And maybe you haven't had, because, you know, watching weight or, you know, health issues, you haven't eaten chocolate cake in years. But you see this cake and all of a sudden you start to notice your mouth is starting to water and you're starting to feel really warm and fuzzy. You can't understand what's going on. Is that chocolate cake that you're seeing at the bakery there has activated an association from deep within your subconscious mind from your past about parental approval and love. Another example of that might be, let's say that you leave the house having just had your chocolate cake and your milk, and you go next door to play with your friends. And your friends have a little dog who you've played with 100 times, but for some reason you pull its tail and it snaps at you and actually bites you in the cheek. And it's not a big bite, but it's a very traumatic experience for you. And so we're going through the farmer's market now in adulthood, and you see a little dog that reminds you of a dog that you haven't thought of in years, and you start to feel anxious. You drop into fight or flight. That's because the association around that type of dog activated a subconscious warning in your mind that filtered all the way up to your autonomic nervous system. So by aligning all heart, soul, mind, body, conscious, subconscious, we start to access kind of the full range of our subconscious mind, discover where we have experiences and associations that don't serve us, and allow those to be released and this is really important working with trauma victims, allowing those to be released, and by the power of suggestion, offering new empowering beliefs that will serve the client best interest. So what we're doing is we're going into the subconscious mind and encountering those associations that are negative with the experiences and replacing them with positive ones and bringing the whole system into alignment, kind of the tune-up. So that's kind of the long and short answer.
Okay. That's a little bit, it's a little bit alarming to know how vulnerable our subconscious minds are and how much we pick up along the way. And it also reinforces why good parenting is so important.
Yes.
But even all that, I mean, we have shows like this to educate people. Well, we can't possibly know it all, and we're inevitably going to program our children in ways that they may have to undo as they get older. So why do you think we're designed this way?
Well, on the one hand, I think there's a biological imperative to it, is that it's been said that humans are the most vulnerable from birth to early childhood of any animal on the planet. And I don't, if people take offense at calling human beings animals, I don't intend that. But, you know, horses, a little colt stand the minute of birth, and, you know, other primates are much more self-sufficient very quickly. But given the complexity of our brain as it's being formed from birth on, we need lots of help in getting there. You know, when the brain and mind comes online, it's a wonderful and powerful thing. But I think there is some degree in which, we know now, for example, that the human brain isn't even fully developed until a person is in their mid-20s, 22, 23, 24, you know. So that's why it's so traumatic for young people in war, for example, you know, because your average soldier is, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, and they see horrible things in combat, and their brains aren't formed yet fully even, and, you know, they're making deep impressions, and so post-traumatic stress disorder even becomes even more profound. So I think in some ways the reason we need so much help is because for the first two decades of our life, we're still a work in progress, actually. And so, you know, sociology aside, I think the biological imperative suggests that that's one of the reasons.
Okay. There's a comment in your book by Wayne Dyer that says abundance is not something we acquire, it's something we tune into.
Mm-hmm.
What is he talking about there?
Well, it's a very popular understanding in the self-help community, in the spiritual community now, called the law of attraction. And the law of attraction really links up the power of the mind with understanding the role of energy and vibration that's come to us through quantum physics. And the law of attraction would say that you do not receive in your life what you want as much as you attract to yourself what you already are. So if someone wants to become financially abundant and prosperous, but they have programming in the subconscious level, and this is very often, and again, no offense to religion, I was an Episcopal priest, and so I have lots of religious experience, but you know, there's a quote in the Bible that's taken very often out of context that says that the love of money is the root of all evil. Well, if you grew up with that being kind of pounded into your head Sunday after Sunday in your family and religious experience, then that's one of those very deep associations in your subconscious mind. And that is the energy around money that you're actually transmitting, if you would, to the world. And so you attract that back to you. You can think, okay, I want to be wealthy. I want to be wealthy. I want to help the world. I want to have a nice car. I mean, whatever it is. But if what you're sending out in your broadcast mode, so to speak, is that money is the root of all evil, then you're not going to experience the abundance and the kind of prosperity that you want. So the quote by Dr. Dyer, one of my heroes, who, has, as we know, has passed now, says that it really is important in all areas of our life, but in the case of abundance, to be in alignment with what we most deeply desire. And so very often people come to me for hypnotic self in deprogramming, in kind of picking off those harmful beliefs. You know, my parents, I'm 61.
Our connection is really, really not so good. Okay, let's try that again. It's a little bit hard to hear you. Okay. Say that again.
Another limiting belief in regards to money is that when I grew up, my parents were Depression era kids. They grew up in the 20s and then early 30s. And if I heard it once, I heard it 1,000 times that money doesn't grow on trees. Well, obviously my subconscious mind took that in and made an association that money, it does not grow on trees. And so, in other words, money is hard to come by. So that, if that is my transmission energy that I'm sending out, then that's what's going to come back to me. Money is hard to come by. And so it's a matter of reprogramming the subconscious mind to be able to transmit energies of abundance, of prosperity, of being in alignment with our deepest desires when it comes to finances. And so that's a lot of what's around that statement of his.
So can we use things like affirmations and positive statements to deprogram and reprogram?
Yes, they are part of a wonderful toolkit. In and of themselves, they have power. And what you need to do with affirmations and positive statements is you have to constantly be working with them. Because the law of repetition is a law of life. You know, again, this notion that money is the root of all evil, or that money doesn't grow on trees, or that women can't be trusted, or men are crooks, I mean, whatever the subconscious program is running, it has been playing in our minds daily for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. So affirmations can help chip away at negative beliefs, but why I love hypnotherapy so much is we can go even deeper into the mind and actually disable the beliefs, so then allow the affirmations that the clients work with on a daily basis to be more powerful and take root more quickly.
Okay. So sort of a shortcut to our issues. That's really wonderful. And it's also, I think part of it is recognizing what it is we're hung up on. And then every time we catch ourselves doing that, you know, to really think a different way. So also in your book, you talk about the placebo effect, and we kind of all know what a placebo is, but how does that relate to our magnificent mind?
This is a fascinating subject to look at. I'm giving a talk this Saturday for anybody that's in the Los Angeles area at the University of Philosophical Research in the Los Feliz area on medical hypnosis and the mind-body connection. And this is, in some ways, what I spend most of my day doing, because I am working out of the New Visions Medical Group in Beverly Hills, and so I work with a lot of people who are coming off of drugs, who are struggling with anxiety and depression, who have other physical challenges. And because on my left side of my office is a nurse practitioner, on the right side is a psychiatrist, and then next to them are two internal medicine doctors, and then there's me. And the doctors work with their clients, and they say, you know, for particular clients, particular patients, they say, you know, you're used to taking over the course of a month 160 Vicodin. I'm going to give you half of the prescription. You can have the other half if you want it, but I'm asking you to go see Dr. David down the hall. Let him work with you to reduce your pain without medication through hypnosis. If it doesn't work, come back and I'll give it to you. Well, only one has gone back. Only one person has gone back because we've been able to more effectively manage pain, which is very amenable to hypnosis, and anxiety and depression. Now, the placebo effect is we understand it, and yet we don't, in kind of very common parlance. You know, the placebo effect is that the medicine doesn't work, you know, that a particular percentage of the population receives, of a study, receives, quote-unquote, real medicine, and the other percentage receives sugar pills. For the real medicine to be deemed effective enough by the FDA to be on the market, to be released on the market, it has to be effective, get this, in 51% of the cases of a study. So only 5.5 people out of 10 have to receive benefit from the medicine. Now, all 10 can receive benefit, but not directly from the medicine because they're getting sugar pills. And so that shows the power of the mind to heal the body. And in my book, I have several examples of cases where people have received only saline solution when being told that they're receiving morphine or sumatriptan, which is a drug for Parkinson's disease, or other kinds of medications, and it's only saline, and they're experiencing physiological changes that exactly mirror what would happen if they were receiving the actual medicine. There's one case in the University of San Francisco Dental School where they were doing serious dental surgery on people and telling them, we're going to give you a heavy narcotic to help you rest so you can go into surgery. And they injected them with saline solution, water. And as hoped for and anticipated, most of them knocked out. Halfway through the procedure, the dentist injected a medicine that is used to overrule the effects of the drug. And so it's like a Narcan. The paramedics use in the field when somebody is overdosed on narcotics, they can give them a shot to save their life and bring them back because it overrules the activation of the drug in the brain.
Okay.
Well, they gave this injection to the people in the dental surgeries who were, quote-unquote, under the influence of the narcotic they had received earlier. And all of a sudden, they started to come out and causing pain and, ow, and, oh, my God, the pain, I'm hurting, and excruciating agony. And they said, okay, here, we're going to give you more narcotics and give you more saline solution. And back out they went. Well, there's two interesting things here. First of all, is that we know that hypnosis is very effective with pain management because all over the United States, hypnotherapists go into the dental suites with patients so they can have root canals and things like that under the influence of hypnosis only, mental anesthesia, they used to call it. In Europe, for example, they do brain surgery with no anesthesia other than hypnosis now. The FDA will let that happen in the United States, but in Europe they're doing it. So that's the one thing that's interesting, is that
that is. That's super interesting. And then there's also the nocebo effect, which most of us have not heard about. And what is that?
The nocebo effect. Well, first of all, the word placebo is Latin for it means I will help. The word nocebo means I will harm. It's Latin. The nocebo effect is, as you might imagine, the placebo effect in reverse. That if an authority figure can convince your mind that something is bad for you, your body will react that way. Now, let me give you a very quick example. In Japan, they took children, kind of a cruel test to my mind, but they took children who were highly susceptible to skin infections, skin rashes. And they said, this is poison ivy, and we're going to rub, and they rubbed it on the inner part of their left forearm. And their within a matter of minutes, their arms erupted in rashes and itching and welts and bruises. Well, the trouble was it wasn't poison ivy at all. It was a grass that had no allergic properties to it. And so they said, okay, now we're going to take a powerful spray that's going to counteract it. And again, it was saline solution. And they sprayed it on the arm, and the arm went back to normal. So this is the nocebo effect. They did at Stanford Medical School, they did a research project where people had asthma, and they said, what we're going to do is you have a red inhaler and a blue one. A little like the Matrix here, a red inhaler and a blue one. What we're going to do is we're going to ask you to use the red inhaler first, and it's going to cause a powerful negative reaction. And we need you to do that so we can test the power of the blue inhaler. And so the people inhaled the red inhaler, and sure enough, their asthma came on full-blown, horrible. They then gave them blue inhalers. Okay, now the powerful medicine. They gave it to them, and the asthma symptoms abated. Of course, you can guess that both the red and the blue inhaler were only saline solution in puffer form. Mm-hmm. So this shows the power that doctors, that witch doctors, using the old kind of common parlance about putting curses on people, but even parents can have on children. If a parent tells a child they underperform, they're no good, that creates the nocebo effect, and the child believes it and begins to perform according to that.
That is so fascinating. Really is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You also talk about, and this I think is a pretty provocative topic, the difference between change and transformation. I really, you know, that really started me wondering, what really is the difference between change and transformation?
Well, for me, it is obviously an optic of how I view the world, but I like to use it with my clients. The number one reason that people come to hypnotherapists in the United States is to stop smoking. The number two reason is to lose weight. And then number three kind of spreads across the board, you know, fear of public speaking, fear of flying, wanting better, you know, romantic relationships, you name it. But number one and two are clearly stop smoking, lose weight. When we talk about making change, it is that a smoker becomes a non-smoker. They're able to become an air breather in the parlance of the tradition here, that they are able to overcome their addiction to nicotine, and in so doing, not smoke cigarettes anymore. But one of the things that we know with smokers is, remember, we go back to the original premise of having experiences and associations are formed around those experiences that give meaning.
Yes.
Your average smoker in the United States started when they were 13 years old. Again, we know this empirically. And usually it was because an older brother or sister or friends convinced them that it was cool to smoke, and they wanted an ally in rebellion. And so they started smoking then. And again, back in my generation, you know, smoking was considered cool and sexy with James Dean and his cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And so they're just a layer upon layer upon layer of associations about how good, cool, sexy, and helpful smoking was supposed to be for you. And then we know clinically, of course, and medically what a horrible thing it is for you. And so, but we have to go under and release layers of belief. And ultimately, we have to get into people's fear response, because one of the reasons that any of us have any addicted response is because we're deeply afraid of some part of life, and we're using the drug, the process of shopping or adrenaline or sex or alcohol to numb ourselves out from it. So when we can help the person release the fear from behind the addiction, then more happens than just stopping smoking. There's a transformation that occurs. A person becomes more courageous. They are less likely to fall back into habits that don't serve them. So the actual change of stopping smoking has happened, but the transformation of becoming a more fully complete, authentic human being has also taken place as well.
Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners, we are talking with Dr. David James about his book, Discovering Your Magnificent Mind, Finding Freedom, Prosperity, and Healing. Is there anything that, you know, that I haven't touched upon that you think is real important to share?
Two things. You know, I guess next time I do my business cards, I'm going to put a motto on that's come to me on my business card. And it is that whatever the mind creates, it can recreate. Whatever the mind creates, it can recreate. And we know and are understanding every day more and more about how much of our life is created by our mind. And so if the mind can create it, it can recreate it. You know, habits can change, beliefs can be ameliorated, relationships can be transformed, bodies renewed, all through the power of the mind. And so that's an important thing to understand. And then the second thing that I think that I would like to point out quickly, excuse me, is the function of two parts of our central nervous system, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. And why it's important to understand that is it's important to understand how deeply important it is that we need to learn how to relax more. Sympathetic nervous system activates when we are under stress, and it's commonly called the fight or flight mode. What happens when we are under stress and the fight or flight response is activated? You know, our pupils pinpoint, blood goes to our extremities, we lose our appetite. In other words, we're getting ready to fight or run. And that should be an either-or issue. We should either be running from the saber-toothed tiger or fighting for our lives. But what happens when somebody's under chronic acute stress is that it's more rather on or off. It's more like a pilot light that constantly burns. And what happens is that means that constantly adrenaline and cortisol and all kinds of harmful chemicals are constantly flowing through our system and affecting our organs and our muscles and our nervous system in negative ways. So when we learn to activate the parasympathetic nervous system through meditation, through yoga, through hypnosis, we actually activate a different part of our central nervous system that shuts off the harmful chemicals that are constantly coursing through our bodies and allowing us to renew and restore. So if there was anything I would encourage the listeners today to do, besides buy my book, is to learn to relax more effectively. Because when we're more relaxed, more centered, more balanced, we are more creative, we enjoy life more, and it's actually a much happier ride. So fight or flight versus relaxation, I vote for relaxation.
Absolutely. So meditation, I think, is really important. I know every therapist I've ever worked with or talked to always says it's got to be part of your daily routine, like brushing your teeth. It's really, really important that we all do that. And, you know, the fight or flight thing, because I work with a lot of people who have emotional child abuse issues, adults with emotional child abuse issues, and they're all running on fight or flight, all of them, because it's
yes.
a pattern that they learned, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a hard pattern to undo. So is fear at the base of really all the things that hold us back?
Ultimately, I think so. You know, there might be skills that need to be learned to accomplish something. We may, you know, if we want to become a virtuoso pianist, we have to learn how to play the piano. But if we're afraid of people's judgments or criticism or negative thoughts, we'll never even take it up. So I think you're right. In that example, you know, we may desire to be a public speaker, but again, if we're terrified of people's judgments, you know, will never get on stage. And so a lot of the work that I do with people is all around helping them release fear so they can accomplish what they want to do. And then I say, now go out and learn how to do what you want to do. But I think you're absolutely right. When fear blocks you, even your ability to learn what you want to learn is blocked as well.
Right, right. And I can almost feel, you know, when something triggers a fear or like that in me, I usually feel it in my solar plexus or something, like just a part of my body that just tightens. It's like, no, I'm not letting go. I'm just not letting go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we all have that response. Let's see. There's one other thing. Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you about the central nervous system, and you actually just talked about. So how would you summarize all of this?
That, as I said, perhaps in the cover of the book, that we have, each of us, regardless of our level of education, regardless of our social or family upbringings, regardless of our religious beliefs, we have within us a deeper level of power and possibility than we even think possible. And I say that as someone who works with my mind and other people's minds every day. I am continuing to understand new levels of possibility in my own mind, my own life. And I do this every day. So each of us have levels of depth and magnificence and accomplishment and happiness that we haven't even thought possible. And as we learn to work with our magnificent mind, we can open into these possibilities and discover that for the rest of our lives, it could be one unfolding amazement after another.
How exciting. That is so exciting. So your email is davidjameshypnosis.com, and you also published your phone number in this book. Should I read it? Should I tell people what it is?
Sure. Yeah.
It's 818-724-9314, and his website is davidjameshypnosis.com. So it has been wonderful. I know I've learned a lot. Great insight into my life, and actually it really helps me work with other people too. So thank you very much for your book and for all of your knowledge and what you do, the work that you do.
Thank you. If people want a copy of the book, all they have to do is go to my website, davidjameshypnosis.com, and on the front page is a copy of the image of the front page of the book. They just click the link, it takes them to Amazon, and they can order the book right there.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you very much again for being my guest. And the next
thank
time you write another book, call me or email me.
I will.
Me.
Thanks very much.
And we'll have you
all
back.
Right.
Okay, take care. Take care. So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. That's randygfine.com. And I hope you'll join me next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing. May joy and serenity always be yours.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's randygfine.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.